I do not like icebreakers. Primarily, the introvert guy in me is like, no, I don't feel compelled. Especially at work function, I was always like, no, let's just talk about this meeting and not let's speed this thing along. We don't have to do it. I do remember playing one that I want to talk about today. Who has played Two Truths and a Lie? Anybody done that one? Most of us, right? Right. So the idea here is Two Truths and a Lie. I would tell you two true things about me, and then I would tell you a lie. I'm not going to actually do it. But that's when I remember, and the whole point is to get to know the person, right? You realize what are two true things about them and where's something that they lied about. Who they are, maybe who they're not. And the true statements kind of talk about who that person might genuinely be, the honest truth about who that person is. And then the lie, of course, is what do we not want? Who are they not? And today, we're going to kind of talk about that and about genuineness and truth and honesty. And we're going to talk about that within the context of the Christian community. So what I want us to think about today is this. Genuine Christian community takes genuine Christians. We want to be a genuine Christian community. We have to have genuine Christians to do that. So we're going to look actually today at the end of Acts 4. We did most of Acts 4 yesterday, or last week, not yesterday. I might have read it then. We're going to do the end of Acts 4 and then the first part of Acts 5. The rest of Acts 5 is super important. There's great stuff there, but we're not going to hit it today. A lot of that is some type of stuff we've talked about before, about how the apostles continue teaching and get some resistance. We're not going to hit that because what I want to do for this week and then next week is get to some more inner workings of the church. So that's what we're going to see today. So we're going to talk about the genuine Christian community, how it takes genuine Christians, and that's what we're going to see today. So let's do it. The Bibles, if you want to follow along, should be open to it there on your tables. Otherwise, it will be up here behind me. As always, we're going to read Acts 4, 32 to 35 to get us started. So let's do that. Here we go. All the believers were one in heart and mind. No one claimed that any of their possessions was their own, but they shared everything they had. With great power, the apostles continued to testify to the resurrection of the Lord Jesus, and God's grace was so powerfully at work in them, all that there were no needy persons among them. For from time to time, those who owned land or houses sold them, brought the money from the sales, and put it at the apostles' feet, and it was distributed to anyone who had need. We'll stop there for a second. This is very similar to Acts 2, 44 and 45, which says all the believers were together and had everything in common. They sold property and possessions to give to anyone who had a need. So we're seeing this is a part about the Christian community is what we're going to see here, is what the community was going to be like. And there's a pattern of life emerging. So what is this pattern of life? And as it says right away in verse 32, they're of one heart and one mind. And this is more than just the fact that they're agreeing on things, more than they're just settling the little disputes and little beefs they have with each other. This is that they're really living together with the same focus. Their hearts are in the same place. And for these guys, back in this day, the big thing was to help the needy and the poor. This was a big deal in Jerusalem at the time. Because if we look at Jerusalem and at that time, it was not like this big economic hub. It was not a place where a lot of people were thriving. You had some super wealthy people, a small group, fairly wealthy, but then you had a whole lot of extremely poor and people in extreme poverty. It created this need. When we heard about the lame man being healed, he was begging for alms. This was very common, and this was needed because they were needy. All right, so the giving of alms, this was expected. People were very poor and in poverty. So this group gets together and says, okay, we're going to support and help those in need, the people that are poor. So what they did to do it mostly was sell extra that they had. They sold extra property and possessions. Again, this isn't selling the only home or all the stuff they had, but anything extra they may have sold and given it away. And when they did this, they had to trust the community they were a part of. Because when they give it, they basically sign the money away completely for the apostles to distribute it. They're willing to give it away. The apostles are going to deal with it so that it goes to those who are in need. The other thing to realize about this was not promoting any sort of laziness amongst the community or trying to be like, oh, I just don't have to do anything because I'll get helped out if I need it. I'm just going to mooch off whatever the people bring in. That's not what's happening. This is the fact that there's very real need. These people are in very difficult times. So the people get together and say, this is how we're going to do it. We believe this is what God has called us to do as a community. All right, because they were taken care of by God's grace. They believed in the grace of God, and they're living that out by giving. It says the apostles continue to testify, which would be teach or explain the resurrection, and that God's grace was upon them. God's grace wasn't just on the apostles as they were teaching and explaining. It was, but that wasn't it. It was also on them as they created this new type of genuine, awesome Christian community. All right, they were of one heart, one mind, and this is a super cool community. I was trying to think about a community that would be really genuine or have one heart and one mind. And maybe it says something that I didn't really come up with people that do it, but I got to elephants. How did I get to elephants? Let's find out. My kids, mainly my son Jeremiah, loves all things animals, dinosaurs. We've talked about this before. One thing we do is, if any of you are familiar with Disney Plus, we have the Disney Nature series, the documentaries that are on there. And this one was on elephants. This one was awesome. All right, narrated by, I believe it was Meghan Markle, and it's primarily focusing on this little elephant, this baby elephant, I think is in one of those pictures, named Jomo. But the whole point here is that the elephants are trying to get to their new water source. They need water to survive the dry season. They have to be of one heart and one mind as a herd, and they follow their leader, but they all get there together, right? They follow the matriarch elephant who leads them. But they're together, they're helping each other along, they're sharing the little bits of food and water they find along the way, but they have to do it together. They are of one heart and one mind. We all want to get there together, and our mind is we have to get to this new water source, so they're all together. So for us, clearly, we are not a herd of elephants, but what does one heart and one mind look like for us? I think it's that our hearts are truly in the same place. And that is that our hearts are on God all the time. Our hearts are just on God, because then where our hearts are, our minds will follow. But it's putting our hearts on God for the right reasons. It's focusing on God in the right way. It's not thinking that, hey, God's awesome and he can do everything. How can God serve me? What's he going to do for me? It's the flip side of that. It's how can I serve this God that has saved me for eternity? How can I serve him? Now, I don't think it's going to be exactly the same, necessarily, as what the early church did. They had to sell things and give the money away. That's what they were called to do. That was the need they had. That was the need that was there. And also, they weren't compelled to do this. They weren't forced to do it. They genuinely wanted to do it, to serve God by serving the other people around them. They did it because their hearts were focused on serving God. And because of that, the action was to sell their possession. So I think what we have to do, we think about and put our hearts on, how can I serve God by serving others? What are the needs in our community? What are the needs in your community, where you live, where you work, where you play? What is the needs in your circle of influence? I like the phrase circle of influence. The people that are around you, that might listen to you, that you talk to, that you come in contact with. For some of you, it's huge. For some of you, it's very small. It doesn't matter about the size. It's how can you serve God within that? And to do that, I think we have to look at what the needs really are. I think sometimes there's a tendency to decide how we should serve someone without finding out what they really need. And then maybe we're not actually helping out the need. So take some time to find out the need. It might be financial. We're all honest, money helps a lot of times, but it's not the only need. It might be bringing food or meals. It might just be time. Maybe somebody needs you to watch their kids for a little while, or just be there to listen to them, or just to help them at home with your time. It can and it will vary. But I think for all of us, we need to look at what are the needs in our circle of influence, in our communities. Here as a church, we look at that, and also individually where you are, we should look at that. Earlier this year, as a church, we did a school supply drive for one of the schools here in Verona. There were kids that legitimately could not get their own school supplies, and they needed them. So we came together and got some school supplies and were able to get them distributed. We were all of one heart and one mind together. We wanted to serve that need. And we want to continue to do that as a church, and I want to encourage you as individuals to do that as well, to have that heart to serve God and figure out how you can do that in your community. And then when we do that, we're genuine, okay? We do that out of a genuine heart for God. So we want to be this genuine community. And like we said, it will take genuine hearts, genuine Christians. The next two verses here of Acts, we're going to see an example of our genuine Christian. Let's read the next two verses. This will finish up chapter 4. This is 36 and 37. It says, Joseph, a Levite from Cyprus, whom the apostles called Barnabas, which means son of encouragement, sold a field he owned and brought the money and put it at the apostles' feet. That's it. This is our example of a genuine Christian. We got this guy whose original name is Joseph, but he's known as Barnabas. Barnabas, the name, according to this, means son of encouragement. He is going to show up a lot more later in Acts, if you're familiar with the book at all. He'll show up a little bit in the series we're going to do, but he's a lot in kind of the second half with the missionary journeys with Paul. But he was a dude that's actually known as like a relational bridge builder. He was helping to bridge relationships. He was a good dude, it kind of seems like. So in our story, what does he do? Well, he does exactly what we're hearing about. He is a specific example of somebody that had some extra land, most likely in the area of Cyprus, based on where he probably was from or had land. And then he takes it, he sells it, and he lays it at the apostles' feet, all the proceeds at the apostles' feet. This is a generous and genuine response to God's grace. He trusts God, so he gives to God via the apostles. He trusts them to do well with it. He genuinely wanted to help. That's all that mattered to him. All right, so why this story? Why him? Well, one being, we're going to finish up here in a little bit with the next part of the story. Barnabas sets up the fact that there will be an opposite to a genuine Christian, so it sets that up. It also sets up who Barnabas is a little bit, because like I said, you see him more in Acts. But third, I think it's a specific example of someone acting in a very genuine manner. And it could have been towards people he didn't really know. The Christian community is growing at this time. Throughout Acts, it says their numbers were continually added and added. Barnabas may not have known the people personally, but he's like, man, there is a need. I just want to give to it and really help. There's a lot of people there, but he had a very genuine heart to just care about others. Genuine people are super cool when you come across it and you really experience someone being genuine. I've shared before, I worked at a coffee shop for a number of years before my kids were born. And I worked at a location that was going to close down. We were going to shut down our location. And we put up signs, I don't know, a couple weeks before we were going to shut it down. And most of the people coming through the drive-thru up to the table see the sign like, oh my gosh, you're closing. What am I going to do? Where am I going to get my coffee? And we'd kind of take a breath and be like, well, you'll go to one of the other 87 coffee shops in Madison. I'm sure you're going to be just fine. There's plenty of places to get your soy vanilla latte with an extra shot, not too hot, whatever it was. Okay. That wasn't it, right? But there was a lot of, oh, poor me going on. I get it. The convenience was going away. But then there's this one guy that came up to the counter, and he was this elderly gentleman. He walked with a cane, definitely older. I'm sure he's retired. He would come in three, four times a week, just get a cup of coffee. He was like, kindest, most gentle, soft-spoken guy, and he would just sit in the back, and he would read his book and drink his coffee, and that was it. And he came up, and he saw the sign, and then he looked right at me, and he actually looked at me. I'll never forget his eyes. And he looked at me, and he said, are you going to be okay? He was fine. Somebody was concerned about, hey, there's people that might be losing their jobs here, that might be out of work because this place is closing. Now, thankfully, none of us did. We went to other locations, but I can still see him being a genuine person. He genuinely cared about us, the people that were working there. So I remember seeing it in somebody and feeling someone's genuineness. So how do we act genuine? I think it's important we need to define genuine. So if we're going to be genuine Christians, what is it? Genuine is truly what something is said to be. Truly what something is said to be. So if you hear of maybe you have a genuine leather jacket, all right? So this would be an actual true piece of leather. It's not some other material that is textured to look and feel like leather. It's actually what it claims to be. So for us, when we talk about genuineness, we need to be who we claim to be and do things for the right reasons. Think about it. If community is one heart and one mind, let's think of genuineness as the right heart and right mind, all right? We're not trying to gain favor. with what we do. You're not trying to impress God by all the things you do. Just be like, hey, God, you see how much I gave there? That was pretty cool, huh? Threw a few extras at that person, yep. You can't impress him with that. We're not trying to impress others. Now, you may. Other people may be like, wow, that's super cool that you did that, but that's not the motive. Right? Maybe take the mindset almost that what you're doing is somewhat anonymous. Nobody's going to know you're doing it, and that's what makes it awesome. You know, it's not signing the letter, putting your own stamp on it. And there's nothing wrong with that if people do know you did it, but I want to do it with the right heart, that it's truly about the other person. Do it from a genuine heart to be a genuine Christian. As a church, we want to be genuine. Think about the trunk or treat coming up that we just talked about. It's going to be an awesome, fun, free, and safe event for a whole bunch of kids in the area. We're not out there soliciting money or their information or anything else. We just really want some kids to come, get a whole bunch of candy, get an awesome sugar high, have a blast, and then go. That's it. It is a genuine event, and I hope that's what it is again. Because of the church, we want to be genuine. But to be that as individuals, we need to be genuine Christians to do that. So truly be what you claim to be, a genuine, genuine Christian. Now, if we talked about genuine Christians, like our guy Barnabas, and like we all strive to be, we have to understand that there will be the opposite of that. We're going to have some dishonesty. Let's read the first part of Acts chapter 5 and see the other side of it with some people we're going to meet named Ananias and Sapphira. So we're going to read Acts 5. This will be 1 through 11. Now a man named Ananias, together with his wife Sapphira, also sold a piece of property. Cool, they're selling some land too. With his wife's full knowledge, he kept back part of the money for himself, but brought the rest and put it at the apostles' feet. Then Peter said, Ananias, how is it that Satan has so filled your heart that you have lied to the Holy Spirit and have kept for yourself some of the money you received for the land? Didn't it belong to you before it was sold? And after it was sold, wasn't the money at your disposal? What made you think of doing such a thing? You have not lied just to human beings, but to God. When Ananias heard this, he fell down and died, and great fear seized all who heard what had happened. Then some young men came forward, wrapped up his body, carried him out, and buried him. About 3 hours later, his wife came in, not knowing what had happened. Peter asked her, tell me, is this the price you and Ananias got for the land? Yes, she said, that is the price. Peter said to her, how could you conspire to test the Spirit of the Lord? Listen, the feet of the men who buried your husband are at the door, and they will carry you out also. At that moment, she fell down at his feet and died. Then the young men came in, and finding her dead, carried her out and buried her beside her husband. Great fear seized the whole church and all who heard about these events. Here we have the opposite of genuineness. Not a mark of a genuine Christian. We have dishonesty. We have a hardened heart. So what's kind of summarizing the story? We have this married couple, Ananias and Sapphira, who do what, on the front end, what some people have been doing. They sell extra land. But then they go to the apostles. Ananias goes, but holds some of the money back. And just at that moment, as it's happening, Peter knows this is not an honest gift. So the implication being that Ananias had let him know, hey, this is everything I got for the land. I'm giving it all to you. Peter calls him out. Ananias dies right there on the spot. Sapphira, his wife, comes in. She has full knowledge of all this. Not that he died, but that he held back some of the money. She comes in, and Peter says, okay, she gets the benefit of the doubt here. Is this the whole price? She says, nope. She says, yeah, totally is. That's everything we got. She dies too, so she lies. The issue here is the lie, the dishonesty. That's the problem. That is the opposite of genuineness. It is not a mark of a genuine Christian, of somebody we want to be. It's the in essence, it's like the cover-up. It wasn't necessarily that they held money back, but that they lied about it. All right? They weren't compelled to sell their land. We don't even know that they necessarily had to give it all. From what we know, Ananias could have said, hey, I'm keeping 25%. I'm giving you 75%. I don't know that anything would have happened to him then. But the fact is, he said, I'm giving you all of it. Here it is. And he lies. Now, why did they die? I have no idea. That seems fairly extreme. I'm fairly confident that if we walk out of here and Sam tells a lie, he's not going to drop dead in the parking lot. I don't know that, but I'm fairly confident. All right? But I think what it's supposed to do is just talk about how serious this is. Because like Peter says, you didn't just lie to us. You lied to God. This is a big deal. This is not what we do as a Christian community. We're honest people. Peter even likens it to the battle, in essence, between good and evil, between Satan and the Holy Spirit. He says that here. This is the same battle we see in Luke chapter 4 when the devil tempts Jesus. Or in Luke 22 when it says the devil enters Judas for him to betray Jesus. This is that same type of battle. That's the seriousness of being dishonest. So Peter sees it. He feels it. He knows this dishonesty is there, and he calls it out because he's like, this is not a mark of the genuine Christian community. Dishonesty isn't okay. I need to take a second here and ask you, how were the cupcakes?
So good.
Thoughts?
They were good.
It's okay if you don't like them. That's fine. There's a new recipe. That's nice. Meg wanted to share. What if I told you, earlier I told you that was all of them. I lied. I have more. You didn't need to share them with each other. I have more. We'll bring them out later. I'll share them with you. See, now Brad's excited. Thankfully, Brad's not mad at me. Brad doesn't want me to fall down dead because I lied to you. I held some back. Now why? Why the heck would I do that? I made them. Like, there's nothing compelling me to bring you any of the cupcakes I make. I did. Or to even tell you that I just brought some of them and held some for myself. So why? Why would I do that? We don't know. I didn't need to lie. But it was dishonest. It was dishonest to you. That's what Ananias and Sapphira kind of did. They were just dishonest. They said, yeah, this is everything. No, it wasn't. I said this is all the cupcakes I was able to make and bring. No, it wasn't. All right, it's this dishonesty. So I think what we need to do is look at what leads to lying or being dishonest and what's the problem with this. One of the commentators I love to read, N.T. Wright, wrote this about this section about lying. He says this, when we tell lies, we not only hold heaven and earth apart, we twist earth itself so that it serves our own interests. Lying is ultimately a way of declaring that we don't like the world the way it is, and we'll pretend it's somehow more the way we want it to be. At that level, it's a way of saying we don't trust God the Creator to look after his world and sort it out in his own time, his own way. What he's saying is lying shows a lack of trust in God. We've hardened our hearts and minds towards God. We're not letting him in. We lack a trust in God. And I think when we lack a trust in God, we start to fear things around us. We start to fear how we look to others. We try to look better to others, right? We try to enhance how we look to others. Hello, social media. How many filters and all this kind of stuff are out there? I use them, all right, when I do the porch sessions I put out. Dramatic Cool is my favorite filter. Apparently, I'm trying to look more dramatic or cool or something. I don't know, but it's the one I use. We try to impress others and increase their view of us because maybe we're fearful that we're not everything we should be. I think that's what Ananias did. He wanted the apostles to think highly of him. So he brings what he has, but he lied about it. I think we also fear being uncomfortable. We might lie about our lives to avoid discomfort. Maybe somebody else said or did something we didn't really like. We just say, nah, it's all good. It's fine. Because we don't want to have that uncomfortable conversation. We don't trust that God's going to be with us in that. Or maybe we just don't want to talk about ourselves because it's uncomfortable. We don't trust that God's going to be with us in that. So we're holding back. All right? Ananias probably held something back to ensure financial comfort for himself later by holding the money back. Giving it all away might have made him more uncomfortable financially, and he's not trusting that God will take care of him. We do that. Do we hold back and not give what we should give or what we're called to give because we lack the trust that God will provide? And this comes in money, in time, in resources, in anything. Do we hold back because we want to be more comfortable? So I think we sometimes lie because we care about how we look to others and because we don't want to be uncomfortable. But what matters is how we look to God, how he sees us. What matters is that God is our comfort when we're uncomfortable and our peace when it's not peaceful. We can trust him when it doesn't make sense. So when we start to get dishonest, whether it's with other people or with ourselves or with God, start to wonder, man, am I really trusting in God? Am I trusting him? We don't need to lie, and we shouldn't, to be genuine with God. We've finally now seen a little bit of the inner part of the early church happening right here. And it was set up to be a genuine Christian community. And from these last two examples, it takes genuine Christians. Saw a great example in Barnabas and a less great example in Ananias and Sapphira. Now, it started with knowing that that community should be of one heart and one mind. That's what we want to be too. So put our hearts on God. Now, how that comes out, how we serve God might be different. But when our hearts are really on God and to serve God, we have that one heart. And that we should be who we claim to be in our circle of influence and in our own communities. If we say we're Christians or claim to be Christians, then we should be genuine Christians. Not something else that just kind of textures ourselves to look like a Christian, but actually living that out. How can you do that? How do you maybe need to make some changes to do that better? I know there's some things I need to do better. And then keep our trust in God to avoid being dishonest. Even the little things that maybe we're just not totally honest about. Think about it. Are you lacking trust in God at anything about that? God won't let us down or fail us. He works on his timing and in his ways. And when we're dishonest, we're in essence trying to create something else and to control it a little more. We don't have to because God's got that. So we have a genuine God who wants a genuine Christian church, a genuine Christian community that's going to be awesome. And he wants that with us. He wants us to be those genuine Christians. So let's pray about that. God, I thank you for today. God, I thank you for these words and these couple chapters. God, I thank you that you did and you are setting up a genuine Christian community. God, this is awesome church that's full of people that are who they claim to be, people that love and serve you, and that we can do that by loving and serving others. So God, I pray that all of us would really just figure out where we might need to be more genuine, or how we can be more genuine and who we can be genuine towards. I also pray, God, that we would all remind ourselves to place all of our trust in you. Our trust in you when it doesn't make sense. Our trust in you when it's hard. Our trust in you, God, when we want to do it ourselves. And God, I pray that as we do that, as our trust continues in you and grows in you, that our genuineness as Christian would grow. And then, God, that our genuineness as a whole church community, God, as a church here would grow, and we would just be a genuine Christian community that is a light to this city of Verona, God, and even expanding beyond that. So, God, I thank you again for today. In your name, amen.